Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. There's no Anthony Mangione tonight. He's out sick, and we're going to get right into it. We've got a special guest, Bruce Bennett. Bruce is a tremendous hockey photographer, best I've ever seen. We always could say, people could say they have their favorites. He's definitely my favorite. He's got a great new book out, The Hockey News, Hockey's Greatest Photos, the Bruce Bennett Collection. Bruce, how are you?
Great, Russ. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. You know, a million years ago, you let me see a lot of your photos at your Photoshop, and you said at the time you had like a million, and this book has 250. So how the hell did you cut it down from a million to 250?
Not easily. out of the 40 years, I amassed about 2 million images. Some of them were digitized, and some are still in slide and negative in print form, and managed to go through around 600,000 to pare it down to the 250, and that was no easy task.
No, that's definitely not an easy task. I mean, you've had an amazing career. Something I'd never asked you, I'm going to just ask you one question that's sort of off the beaten path, but what's like the first picture you remember ever taking?
I don't have an answer for that. Yeah, I used to borrow my father's camera, and probably on a school trip. That's all I could think of is we used to go to like Bronx Zoo and Museum of Natural History, and I'd come home with a full roll of film, and my father would berate me. You shot a whole roll of film on what, animals at the zoo? And I think that's pretty much where I started, actually.
Would that have been on like a Kodak Instamatic or something?
Boy, I think it was a Brownie, an odd kind of camera back in those days. But yeah, I think it was a Kodak. I'm not sure, but I remember the name Brownie.
Nice. So looking through this book, and there are really so many tremendous photos. They did a great job on the presentation of it. Just the full bleed, you get some great shots. You've got Lundqvist with the roof at MSG. You know, pictures always sort of evoke emotions out of people, but I kind of wonder, for you it's probably different because a lot of times you're probably like dodging getting hit or hoping that the puck doesn't come through the circle to hit you. And so, like, is there any picture that in this book that you put in there because it was maybe like the hardest one you had to get, or it was just one that was difficult to get?
I'd like to say all of them are difficult to get, but a bunch of them are more like point and shoot, and at 8 to 10 frames a second, you can't go too far wrong. I'm really proud of the back page, which took me a while to perfect. It actually took me 3 games until I got something I was really satisfied with, and that's putting a fisheye lens in the scoreboard at the defunct Nassau Coliseum. Technically, there was a challenge in trying to visualize exactly what you would see, and because you're basically hooking it into the rafters, and then the scoreboard goes up, and you really don't know how well your aim was or whether you would see the entire ice surface. Which is the way I failed the first time, was not seeing the whole surface. So I think that's the one that I'm most proud of now. But, there through the years, I was never a great portrait photographer, so there were opportunities I had and shot a lot of different portraits on players. And that's basically shooting what's presented in front of you. So the challenging ones, the action photography are the ones I'm most proud of.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Juniper Publishing did a great job. I mean, with all these shots that I presume were all on the Hockey News at some point, or many of them. You know, I see Peter Forsberg, you know, at the Olympics, Lillehammer. That's a long time ago, and Forsberg barely had any facial hair. I mean, that's a shot where you see him just sort of looking at the heavens. That's pretty great, knowing that he wins a gold medal. I mean, those kinds of things, you really had. I mean, you've traveled a lot of miles to get all these shots over the years. I mean, I see you at a fair amount of events, and then there's a ton I don't see you at because you're overseas. So your travel schedule has got to be pretty hectic, even now.
It is, yeah. The start of the hockey season is real tough, and the end of it is really tough. Really want to travel around and get to as many games as possible. I have a ton of photographers that work for Getty Images, and they're assigned to games, and then there are freelancers that we assign as well. But really, my strength is stock photography, individual action shots on players. And
okay.
The season starts off, you've got, you know, trading cards and 8x10 manufacturers, and it's real important to score as many players as you can in full body isolated action. And since that's, you know, what I do best, I schedule myself for as many games early in the season as possible. And then my role has evolved with Getty Images. I send out the request lists to the photographers and have to let them know who to shoot and check their images and make sure that we got all those players in their new uniforms.
Yeah, and it's a big deal. Yeah, I mean, that's a really important thing. You know, some other shots I see, like, you know, Dion Phaneuf clocking Michael Sauer, and it happened in 2011, and Sauer pretty much stopped playing at some point in 2012, and, you know, post-concussion, and you see a shot like that, and you kind of wonder, was that the start of it? I don't know if you think about it when you take that picture, but when I see it, it sort of makes me think about that.
Yeah, someone had mentioned that to me. I didn't realize that was pretty much the end of Michael Sauer's career. I think of that sort of thing, I think more of the Nick Kyprios shot where he's
Yeah, he looks like he's napping
ice.
On the ice, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was no nap.
No.
I guess it was Ryan Vanderbush.
Yeah,
with a fight at Madison Square Garden. And people have said that was pretty much the end of Kyprios' career depicted in that photo.
But don't worry, though. Nick talks a lot still. He's fine. You don't have to worry about Nick.
He's good on TV.
He is good on TV. But yeah, Vanderbush was a real tough son of a gun. I mean, you've got pictures of Steve Yzerman where he literally looks like he's 18 years old. You've got an exasperated Wayne Gretzky as a coach. You've got some real, you know, you've got Solani, which there's so many Solani fans. You've got Tretiak in there. I mean, you know, I forget you're old enough to shoot Tretiak, so that's a pretty classic shot. I mean, yeah, I had to stick it in, you know.
Rub it in. That's what I was going to say.
Yep. You have, you know, like a centerized shot from Sochi. I mean, I imagine that couldn't have been easy to get. I mean, when you go to Russia, even though it's the Olympics and even though the IIHF is there for you, I imagine it's probably a little tougher because of the language and everything else to sort of get the position that you're hoping to get for a game to get a shot like that, right?
Yeah, Russia, I guess we expected Russia to be a lot tougher than it was.
Okay.
A lot of the coverage that I plan for, such as Stanley Cup or Olympic Games, it's a little bit of a formula that goes into it, but it's a series of remote cameras. And in the Olympics, regardless of what country we're in, those cameras are put up in the week before the game start, and then on each individual game, you trigger all of them or some of them. So the Russia thing was a little problematic, getting them installed and getting the radio frequencies correct. A little tough accessing the rafters because of security. Every single game was an issue. But, you know, the end result is someone scores an important goal or something important happens anywhere on the ice, whether you have two, three, four, or five photographers, You would also have anywhere up to 9 or 10 remote cameras to make sure that you absolutely do not miss any important moment.
Yeah, see, those are things that, you know, we don't think about. And even me as a writer, I would never even think about it. I definitely don't. And certainly you've made fun of enough pictures of mine over the years on my website, so now I can see why you get so many better shots, besides, you know, you knowing a lot more and me just shooting just to get something.
Right. Well, don't quit your day job and go into photography. That's all I can say. But I always joke around that I really should have become a writer because, you know, you guys in the early days would just walk in with a pad and a pen, and I'd be dragging a coffin filled with clamps and wires and multiple camera bodies and all.
Yep.
And actually, when I started this job, I was like 6'1", and now I'm down to 5'6". The weight of all this stuff is taking its toll.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I mean, although I would think technology's helped you out a little bit. So, like, here's a good picture. You got Mario Lemieux bearing down on Corey Hirsch. Corey Hirsch looks like he's going to make a save. He's a Facebook friend, so I'm going to say he made the save. But we're all pretty sure Mario scored on that one. But you really, you know, you capture his helmet. You capture the old pads. You know, things like that. You could really see the difference between players back then and players now. I like the Ken Linsman shot with the rat on the shoulder. I've never seen that. That's a great shot.
Mm-hmm. That was a Hockey News cover. A lot of the portrait, you know, it's funny as I go, you know, went through and sought out all these different photos and tried to figure out what was going to have the most impact. It turns out like most of those portrait shots were done for either Hockey News covers or done for the NHL's old publication Goal magazine.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
Some of them, you know, so some of them might look familiar. Somebody might say they've seen them in the, you know, in the past. Not a young guy like you, but, you know, the older people might see them in the early days.
Yeah, yeah. You've got the Sutters, but you only have 4 of them. I mean, you definitely missed a few.
The 5th one was actually who's behind the guy on the right. No, he wasn't there. I know. So close to scoring all Sutters in one, you know, that would have been... What a bonanza that would have been. But, yeah, I came up empty on that train.
That's right. I'll tell you, one of my favorite shots in this is, and I never knew this shot existed, Eric Lindros pre-draft hanging from a rope or hanging from something off the anchor bar in Buffalo. And who knew what was going to happen after that? Like, that was before all the hijinks, right, and everything else that went on.
That's right. The following day was the draft. So, it was a dinner at the Anchor Bar with Eric Lindros and Steve Dryden, the editor of the Hockey News. Did some pictures of Eric that night, and he just got a little frisky when we walked out of the bar and started climbing up on the awning. So, made for a nice photo.
Yeah, now here's an interesting one. I was a big, and still am, a big John Candy fan, and you have him with a New York Islanders Cabbage Patch doll.
And to be perfectly honest, that was my Cabbage Patch doll. So, yes, that was my prop. I provided that prop. And that was the Goal magazine. You know, he was a Canadian guy and a big hockey fan. One of those John Candy movies, he was walking around in a Chicago Blackhawks uniform. The name of the movie escapes me. But
we had him,
big hockey fan, and article for Goal magazine, and just photographed him at a hotel in New York City while he was being interviewed.
Yeah, I mean, you've got today's players, you got guys like Kreider, and you've got guys like Chara, and you've got guys doing calisthenics. You've got the old great Western Forum with Bernie Nichols there with the shades on, and Bernie's a great guy. I've interviewed him a few times, and we remember how good of a goal scorer he was. But that's that old Western Forum. I never got to see a game there, but it looks pretty spectacular there. You've got a decent amount of Gordie Howe shots, which we would expect. Lanny McDonald, you know, probably the best mustache in hockey history. This Ben Bishop shot at the Garden, bending over backwards, is that part of his pregame ritual? I never even noticed.
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't realize that he was doing that until probably the second period of the first game I saw him in the finals. And then it became a little bit of a joke because I when he got back to the net, I think it was an overtime game, the first game, and so I was like, oh, please come back to the net where I have the net cam. And I photographed, you know, it's a remotely triggered camera in the back of the net, and boom, he just flips over backwards and kind of looks at the camera, and I blasted that. The Getty Images editors put it up online, and then every game after that was, let's do another picture of Ben Bishop. Let's make a vertical, let's make a horizontal, let's crop into his eyes, let's do just the mask. And over again, it was, how many ways can we do a, virtually the same photo of Ben Bishop? But
that's
I've
awesome.
Never had a goalie bend over that far backwards into the net, right into the net cam.
It's great. I mean, forwards by Wayne Gretzky and Martin Brodeur, two class acts. It's really a tremendous book. It's going to be the hot book to get this year. There's no question about it. I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. Everybody should go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Chapters, all those places. The Hockey News, Hockey's Greatest Photos, the Bruce Bennett Collection. Really a tremendous job. Really great job. And you know what? Maybe when you retire, you can get into writing.
Yeah, I'm going to consider that. I mean, we all know that's a job anyone can do, so that'll be my next career.
No doubt. Bruce, yes, easy stuff. I mean, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Bruce, thanks. Have a good one, and I'll see
you
down the road.
Take care, Russ. See you soon.
You too.
Bye.
All right, now we're going to bring in our second guest, old friend, David Wright, who, you know, I've done tons of shows with at this point, and lives in Canada, unfortunately living through the Toronto Blue Jays game right now, which isn't making him happy. But,
you know, despite the score, I'm doing really good, Russ. I'm doing really good.
Okay, well, that's good.
It
I
is,
mean, I'm going to go
one
through
game.
The same. Yeah, it's one game. That's what you have to tell yourself. I'm going to be going through this tomorrow. It's a long series. You know, I debated a very famous Canadian broadcaster today who was on my show about the Met-Cubs series. I won't say who it was, but we had a fun little chat about it. And, I feel confident, but, you know, we always feel confident about our teams. But let's talk a little hockey.
Cool.
Connor McDavid. I mean, he's having a huge impact, clearly, in Edmonton. In the States, a lot of people know him. You know, it's not going to be like everybody knows him. It's not like Michael Jordan yet or anything, and he hasn't really lit it up yet. But in Canada, give me an idea, in the hockey world, even in the collectibles world, cereal, things like that, how much of an impact has he had so far?
Well, okay, look, here's a kid that in the hockey world, this kid has been had eyes on him since he was 13 years old.
Right.
In the collectible world, here's a guy that collectors have been following since he was 16. So, you know, the build-up to his NHL debut, the build-up to his draft, I mean, everything and anything has been said about this kid and the hope, the optimism, and just the, you know, the well-wishing of hockey fans and collectors has been pretty much put on this kid's shoulders, and now he's four games into making this, you know, making it a reality, and we've got, 3 weeks now, I think, until the first big expected Connor McDavid card is going to come out, and, you know, that is his Upper Deck Series 1 Young Guns.
Yeah, that'll be a pretty big deal. Now, give me an idea, conversely, you know, Jack Eichel gets a lot of press in Buffalo, and he certainly gets a lot of press in hockey cities. I would say a fair amount of people in the States know about him. How do they view him in Canada? Is it sort of adversarial because it's like the American against the Canadian? Is it, you know, give me an idea what that's like.
No, I think what this is, you're seeing a pretty good reflection of, and a lot of people do liken it to this, you're seeing a pretty good reflection of 2005-2006 with the whole Crosby-Ovechkin thing.
Right.
Now, as I said, people have been watching Connor McDavid since he was 13. Eichel, not so much. I mean, maybe some of the hardcore hockey guys have been following his career since he was young, But let's face it, he really
1617's fair, yeah.
Yeah, he really burst onto the scene when he started playing for the U.S. in the U.S. junior system and started doing the under 17 tournaments and the under 20 tournaments. And I think that's when he started turning a lot of people's heads.
Yeah.
And
no
so you know that. And so you've got people that, you know, they're calling Connor McDavid, they're banking money on Connor McDavid, but you've got people also that are saying, you know, like Jack Eichel is right there too. And you know, we had a little bit of this with the Nathan MacKinnon, Seth Jones kind of deal a couple of years ago when they came in, and it was like, okay, you know, here's two guys, they're best of friends, you know, they've played together, and so that kind of hype felt a little bit more manufactured, do I want to say? But with Connor McDavid and I think Jack Eichel, I think this is the true natural comparison to the Crosby-Ovechkin hype machine, if you will, of 05-06 that, let's face it, rescued a lot of hobby stores. And I think you've got a lot of people banking on Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel to breathe some fresh life into, you know, into stores and into hockey collecting up here. And I know several guys that they've actually been banking money for, you know, at least a year and a half, almost ignoring last year's crop to save the money to bank and spend it on this year's.
Yeah, I mean, well, this year is pretty tremendous. What about Dylan Larkin? He's one of my preseason picks to be a Calder finalist and possibly win the award. You know, he's just across the river there in Detroit. He's made the team. He's playing top-line minutes. It's rare when a rookie gets to play top-line minutes, and he's really producing already. Is he getting any kind of big buzz yet?
He will be. He'll be getting buzz from, once again, the people that maybe look beyond McDavid and Eichel. I mean, you know, McDavid and Eichel, they're obviously the easy 1-2 choices. But, yeah, Larkin's somebody I've got on my watch list as well. And, you know, he's got three or four points so far in three games. So he's on a point per game on pace right now. Yeah. Which is like, you know, that's talking like Gretzky numbers, point per game. But, you know, I think he's somebody that, once again, people, if they look beyond McDavid and Eichel, he's definitely probably the first one beyond those two that you're going to look at. And it'll be interesting to see, like I said, 3 weeks until the big litmus test is going to be the Toronto Fall Show, because that's when the Series 1 releases. And that's going to be a true measure of who's hot, who's not, who people are chasing, and, you know, who to look for. But I think there's, much like last year and the year before, I mean, the rookie crops the last 3 years have been pretty solid for, you know, if you wanted to do your homework and look into some solid players. I mean, the NHL is in great shape for talent for the next 7-8 years to come. So I think once again, this crop is going to be really good. But the one that I'm looking forward to see probably get the most love, especially being in the Toronto area, is going to be Max Domi.
Yeah, and Domi's really lighting it up. I think he's got 6 points already. I mean, he's getting, you know, top-line minutes. We knew he'd be dynamite with Duclair, which, you know, personally hurts me, but that's okay. Yeah. We actually had Gordy Clark on our XM show, which will actually air tomorrow, and it's funny because he mentioned something about Duclair because, hey, he scouted him, you know, and turned a third-round pick into that and, you know, and some other picks into Keith Yandle, and so that's, you know, when you're talking about doing something for a team, that's pretty special when you could turn an asset like that into a player like that and then, they, you know, and get value for the player even if you trade him. Coyotes have a really great player. Duclair is part of, you know, another guy worthy of collecting. You know, preseason, I was asked to do an article by GTS, and I've been writing for him for, you know, weeks now. And it's hard to sort of figure out who's going to play this year, right? Because that's what they wanted. Right. Who's going to play this year? It was like a month before. And, you know, so you're trying to figure out who's maybe going to get their 9-game cup of coffee, who's going to st- stick, who's, you know, and so, like, I went through, like, all these players, and I would say I'll probably get, like, 75-80% right by the end of the year, because some will come up late in the year, too, you know, they'll get that,
yeah,
that chance at the end of the year. But I got to tell you, I've been tracking a list, and it's unofficial, but, like, right now I'm well over 30 players who have broken into the NHL this year. Now, they're not all from last year's draft, but
sure,
just broken in general and are still rookie capable, like, because maybe they've broken in the playoffs, that kind of thing. And so,
yep,
that's pretty amazing. You go back and think about that. That's, I'm not sure there's ever been a year with that many players getting their first NHL action.
No, absolutely. And that's, you know, like you said, you look at some of these names, and that's where, especially for collectors, like, that's where kind of digging through lists, because, you know, you've got some people,
yep,
that are going to, you know, they're going to see all these names and they're going to think, oh, you know, I'm just going to go out, grab, you know, this year's Series 1 and try and find these guys. But don't forget, some of these,
yeah,
guys have been in stuff already.
Yeah, because they played one game back in, you know, 5 years ago, and now they're,
right,
they're really getting to play, and they're still rookie eligible. And, yeah, so, you know, these are all the rookie eligible guys who are eligible for the Calder, and it's just, and it's an immense list. Now,
yeah,
as far as first cards, then you could probably lop off, you know, 12 guys from that, you know, 15 guys.
Sure.
But it's still a lot. I mean, we're,
oh,
getting,
yeah,
a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys, and there's a lot of guys from last year's draft. It may set a record just for the amount of guys that get their first cards this year from the draft from the previous season. So we'll see. I mean, I'll probably try and figure that out at some point, but I have a feeling it's going to happen. And to be honest, next year's draft looks real. This upcoming one looks really deep too. It may not have the flash that the past one had, but there's a lot of players. So, I mean, there's,
sure,
it is kind of amazing, the pipeline of players. I mean, that's, and it's not really from a bias standpoint, because baseball had a lot of rookies this year too. I mean, really an inordinate amount, but hockey's been getting them for years. So, I mean, you wonder why, you know, hockey card collecting is so popular. A lot of it has to do with the amount of rookies. It really, and,
yeah,
and the quality,
absolutely,
guys.
It's got to do with the amount of rookies, and, you know, also, let's face it, it's got to do with the, there's zero confusion when it comes to hockey rookie cards.
It's true. There's no, like, pre-anything. Like, sure, there's the unlicensed stuff. We know Eichel's with Leaf,
yeah,
and you get all that. By the way, we'll probably go 5 minutes into overtime so people can come back, you know, log out, go back in and get the rest, because we'll yammer for a little bit. But
well, this is just,
yeah,
going overtime. This is just like old times.
I know, because it's a half-hour show, not an hour. But but the thing is, it's one of those things where you you get these guys, and you're not worried about what is his first yada yada card. You pretty much know what his rookie card is. I don't mind, though, if somebody says, hey, an unlicensed card is a guy's rookie card, because to me,
sure,
collectors always decide. It's like whatever one is most popular, that's the rookie card, because that's really,
yeah,
you know, what drives it.
Yeah, and I think I find that more in hockey collecting. And, you know, tell me if I'm wrong on this, but I think when it comes to hockey collectors, I just get the feeling that the collector dictates a little bit more on the configuration of, or, you know, the recognition of cards in the hockey aspect, more so than I think it gets dictated to the collector in things like,
yeah,
baseball and things like football. I think that gets dictated too, but I think hockey, you're right, they're it's the collector that says, no, this one is the one. This,
right,
one is the one we want. Not, you know, it's not the other way around.
Now, it used to be that way in baseball too, and then things got really complicated and crazy,
right,
and so it's not really like that anymore. I'll tell you, I just recently cracked the cup, right, and I always enjoy the cup because it's,
sure,
it's,
yep,
pretty tremendous. And I showed off a car that was like a three color swatch of Carey Lehtinen with an auto on card auto, and I was like, wow, that's a pretty great card. And then, you know, I get busy and then I don't say anything else, and so I wanted to at least. And, of course, I have a mess on my desk, right, like all collectors do. But if I could find the rest of them, I will let people know on the show what else I got. It is amazing, though. I can't keep things organized enough. And
oh no,
I try.
Like that's the struggle of every collector. Trust me. I get an empty spot on my desk, and within it takes me 3 months to get an empty spot on my desk, and within 3 days, I'm back to the exact same mess.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? It's like
the mess I've created with these Tim Hortons cards is ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
So.
They're a little chintzy. What are they, 3-card packs? Come on, Tim.
Three card packs with one insert per pack. So you're really getting only two base cards.
Right.
It's a 100-card set.
Yeah,
and
nobody's ever completing that set.
And well, they'll get the base set, but I mean, you've got to complete. You got to run this promotion for, they're at least going to run it for 8 weeks. 10 weeks,
yeah,
maybe. So just, consider too. There's like the joke is there's a Tim Hortons every block in Canada, which literally there is. So
you've got to
supply all these Tim Hortons with all these cards. So I mean, you're looking at the amount of cards that are going to be out there for collectors to get are plentiful. But there's a lot
more Hortons now in the States, I got to tell you.
Have they made their ways beyond, a few, maybe 30, 40 miles in from the border? Are they starting to get a little further in there now?
Yeah, they're starting to get a little further in. There's one in Manhattan that's like a part of a Nathan's. It's like a triple. You're getting them
so
now.
So there's a Nathan
a
Hortons
of,
there?
Yeah. In Manhattan. But we don't get, like, the card deals, it doesn't.
No, you guys,
carry over.
Yeah. See, far too often Canada gets the short end of the stick, but at least with this promotion now, America gets the short end of the stick for these cards.
America definitely gets the short end on this one, but it's fun to see Hortons come in. I don't mind. I certainly like it, and it's in a lot of new hockey arenas are getting them, so that's definitely
cool.
Of it too. Yeah, I mean that's a good thing, but. Let's see. I'm looking in my one last desperation spot here for the cup. But what else has pretty much caught your eye last couple of weeks, either about hockey or collecting in general?
Really, I just, much like you said, you went through and you've been making a list. I kind of went through and I've got my, my to-watch list my guys that I'm kind of looking for when Series 1 comes out, kind of hoping to get those aside, and I think I got to do a better job because, like, you kind of blew the cover on Monahan for me when that was going to be my secret. But I think I'll let these ones out. And I think I've already mentioned Max Domi and Dylan Larkin, obviously. But another guy that I've really liked since watching Junior, and ever since the strike / stoppage / lockout, whatever you want to call it. I've started watching more Junior, but we got a chance at the NHLPA rookie photo shoot and showcase there to talk to Nick Petan, and I've been a fan of Nick Petan ever since I've seen him play, and I'm glad that he's going to Winnipeg. I'm glad he's getting to he's getting to play on the same team with Ehlers, and you've got all those young guys now. You got Morrissey there, so you've got those guys that That seems to me to be the perfect place for a Nick Petan is a team like that. They've almost seemed to have structured that team around players like Petan. So I'm just really happy to see him get to the NHL because he was such a good player in Junior, and I really enjoyed, especially for Team Canada, I enjoyed watching him play.
Yeah, I've got a really great in-the-game auto of Petan from back from the draft collection back in a couple of years ago, and he is a great player. And actually, I'm going to promo our XM show again for Hockey Prospect Radio. This week we have Kevin Cheverday up on, and so he talks about a lot of their great young players, and it is amazing. I mean, if you think about it, what Edmonton's been able to do. All right, so I found my stash here, and
nice.
So here's what else I got from the cup. So base card, Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, that's okay.
That's a good
baseball. Yep. Signature renditions, Marian Gabrick. Very nice.
Nice.
Yep. This one's a great card. This is called a just trios, and it's Hedman, Bishop, St- Stamkos, multicolor. You could see the Bay AY from Tampa Bay on there. You know, and it's a patch card, so that's pretty tremendous. Numbered to 10. That's a great card. Let's see. Brad Marchand, it's like a it's the Cup Foundations one, but it's the one that shows like the four window, but it's a big chunky swatch of like the
yeah.
the gold and white with the stitching, and then he's signing it at the little center ice thing, so that's kind of nice. And then Griffin Reinhart, who I have not given up on, even though I know some Islander fans did, and some people. He actually, he's looking pretty good, actually, Griffin Reinhart, the last to start off the season. And so this is a multicolored swatch of his Islander jersey and then auto. So pretty good box. I mean, really
nice. You can't go wrong with that.
No, and but like I said, that I was really happy with the Lehtinen because I've covered him his entire career, and that was actually the second draft I was ever at, and that was the one in Toronto. So that was fun. I remember interviewing him when he was that just back then, and then I covered him in the during the lockout year. They played the Phantoms here in Philly for the Calder Cup, and so I covered him again. It was him against Antero Nidamaki. He was playing for the Wolves. So yeah, you get these kind of memories, and it's kind of fun. But I'll tell you, the hockey season started full bore. I think it's going to be a good collecting year too, and I think next year will be good too. I think a lot of people, I think, were thinking, well, the double rookie class was sort of gimmicky, and then this year they almost could have built it as a double rookie class, because I think by the end of it, they're going to see that it's going to have just as much to give, and then next year there will be a craze for Austin Matthews. I mean, he is already putting in a bunch of goals in Switzerland against men. His team scored 7 goals the other night. I don't even know how many he had. And when you see him, I'll give you the quick Austin Matthews story. So I go and cover a game for the National Team Development Program on Long Island. They're playing in a tournament, and I've got my guys checked off. Jeremy Bracco. I've got a bunch of different guys checked off. Fitzgerald. So I go and I watch the game, and I see this kid rushing down the ice end to end. Who is this? What, 16? Matthews. All right, I got to keep my eye on him. All right. Yeah. How old is he? He's 15? He's playing with these guys? All right. Or 16? Yeah. I think he was 16. 16 playing with these guys? All right. Keep my eye on him. So I'm marking down all my stuff, taking notes on the other guys. Matthews takes another rush, goes end to end, almost gets a goal. And I'm like, wow. I got to really keep my eye on this kid, because this kid is something. And sure enough, he's going to be the surefire number one pick. And probably at that time, Sean Day was the guy who they were thinking would be the number one pick when I was viewing Matthews. And now it's flipped big time. And, Matthews is the guy. So there's always going to be guys to excite collectors, I think, and that's the fun part.
Absolutely, and I think collectors are kind of catching on in the CHL, kind of like the, once again, it's the easy one to pay attention to, but any player given exceptional status in that league, it's probably a good idea to keep an eye on them.
Yeah, you always should keep an eye on them, because they only grant it, I want to say in my lifetime, maybe 5 guys, right?
Well, I was just, because it all started with, if I recall correctly, it's essentially the John Tavares rule, because I think he was one of the first guys to be given exceptional status.
Yeah, Tavares, Crosby, we know Day's gotten it, and there's probably one or two others.
Yep.
I mean, it's a tremendous thing, and I guess, well, actually, Ryan Strom, right, because he was 15 when I viewed him in Erie, I think. Yeah, and so there's probably one more, and so Dylan Strome, not Ryan, sorry.
Yeah.
Dylan Strome.
Oh, great,
that's,
you're
going to
get tweets about that now, too.
Trust me, I get the two mixed up. Just for whatever reason, they don't look anything alike, they're just brothers, and
exactly.
I will get tweets about it. People always want to correct me, and that's fine. But, the point is, those are little clues, but I will tell you, people follow my GTS articles, you will not like it because I've already started to blow the lid off of a lot of these guys to look out for, the Panarins, the Medvedevs, you know, because you got to remember, collectors should not think about just the guys that are drafted. They should sometimes look at the free agent guys who are sometimes coming in at 23, 24, 25, 26 years
absolutely.
Old, even older, because, you know, sometimes that's, you know, you catch lightning in a bottle there too. So you have to look at all of that. You do.
Yep. No, I totally agree.
All right, Dave, I appreciate you coming on. We'll get you. Oh, you know, one thing. Actually, I almost forgot to do this. We'll see if the show holds out. I'm going to play a quick interview with Zach Fucali. I'll keep you on. You and I did it from the NHLPA Rookie Showcase.
Russ Cohen, David Wright for Off the Post, NHL
Rookie Showcase. We're with Montreal Canadiens goalie Zach Fucali. Zach, what do you think of the event? You know, it never used to have a lot of goalies. Now there's more goalies this year than I can remember.
Yeah, it's a great event, and a lot of the guys here we've played together either at the U18s, World Juniors, and NHL camps, or against each other, so that makes it interesting too. So there's some funny stories of how guys played against each other and what happened, so it's good.
Well, and that's the thing with events like this, like you talk about, you've got the camaraderie and like the general knowledge of being with this group of players for the last 3, 4, 5 years even.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Is there anybody new that's come along that you really haven't had a chance to meet that you've gotten to know?
Most of the guys here I never really got the chance to meet before, obviously, but guys that are coming from all over the place, from the U.S. and even in Europe, so... A lot of new faces for sure.
Now, when you see a guy like Skapski get NHL time, that's got to make you feel like, hey, I'm getting pretty close because you know these guys.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, Skaps had a great opportunity this year, and he had a good year, and now he's recovering from an injury. So I hope he'll have a good start of the season, and it'll go well for him. So it's good for everyone.
Mainly, what I've noticed over the years is there's so many goalies, but not a lot of jobs. Sometimes you just need that one break, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, It's part of the game. You need to earn your place, and you know, whenever you do get that opportunity, to take it. So it is very much part of the game.
And now you've been given the opportunity with, you know, arguably one of Canada's, if not Canada's, most favorite and most popular teams. So, you know, how's that worked into, I guess, your process and your preparation for when you get your chance and when you get to step into the NHL? How's that work?
Yeah, well, I just want to prepare the same way I do every year, and that's I want to be as prepared as I can once the camp starts. And I think I've had a great summer to get ready, and I feel ready for it. I feel ready for this jump in the pro level, so I'm really excited about it, and I feel ready for it.
Now, at what age did you realize that goalies are a little weirder than other players?
Who said goalies were weird?
a good answer.
No, I don't know what age. I guess when others started calling me weird, I guess.
Sounds good.
Well, it takes a lot to stand in the way of some of these slap shots. So, you know, it takes something special to stand in the way of these.
Everyone needs a goalie.
Everybody does need a goalie. Like, was that a thing, like, in the neighborhood? Like, if there were just pickup games, would you just play with any team?
Actually, I've been goalie on the ice my whole life, most of my life. So whenever we would play outside, I would always say, okay, this time I'm not being goalie. I'll play forward this time. I would always say that. So.
And you'd snipe a little?
Well, I try. It would work sometimes.
Will you ever try and score a goal like Ron Hextall style, you know?
I don't think, it hasn't occurred where I had the opportunity to do that, so maybe one day. Maybe, we'll see. Never know.
Appreciate it, Zach. Thanks for taking the time out.
Thanks for having me. Thanks.
All right, Dave, that was a fun one, and I have a feeling Fucali will try and score a goal one day, and if he does, we'll take credit.
Sure, there you go. Yeah, we planted the seed in his head. Yes, absolutely.
We absolutely did. All right, well, that's it for Off the Post. Dave, thanks again for coming on, and thanks to Bruce Bennett, and everybody should pick up his book. It's tremendous. Go to Amazon.com, Hockey's Greatest Photos. We'll catch everybody next time.
Thanks, Russ.